I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for joining me for this 84th edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. During this show, we visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as New Mainers. Today, my guest is Wim Schemmer. Wim is an artist who was born in the Netherlands and now lives in Steep Falls, Maine. Welcome to New Mainers Speak, Mr. Schemmer.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure to have you here on this Sunday. So you were born and raised in Rotterdam, Holland.
Correct, yes.
And I wonder what Rotterdam looked like in the 1920s when you were a kid.
Oh, it was a lively city. Of course, we had all these harbors, so there was a lot of international people coming there too. You know what I mean? And of course, we were considered the, what is it called, blue?
Blue?
No, you know, workers.
The gateway to Europe? Oh, blue collar.
Blue collar.
Oh, yes, I see.
Blue collar city compared to The Hague and Amsterdam, but we didn't care. We love the city.
I
still love
city.
The city.
Yes, yeah. It has a reputation for being hardworking.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah. Also, a gateway city. It's the biggest port in Europe.
For freighters, yeah, in
still
the world.
Still today.
Yes, yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That's amazing. And they were doing a lot of freighter transport at the time, too.
Yeah, all went, of course, they had these ships, you know, that went to Germany and France. They unloaded in Rotterdam and then it went to the rest of Europe. That was the idea, you know.
Yeah. And so your father was an engineer?
Yeah, for Shell Oil Company.
Yeah, so you weren't necessarily blue-collar in your family, but as a working-class town.
The city was considered that, you know.
I see.
Yeah, and we showed it sometimes. We were anti-royal, you know. They took the horses away from the carriage of Queen Wilhelmina, and soldiers had to pull it. It didn't help our reputation.
Right. What kinds of games did you play when you were a kid? Did you go out and play in the street with all the other kids?
Always,
that kind of thing?
Always, yeah. But shall I say, you know... you spin something and then you have a stick with a, you know, you...
Like a hit. Hoop that you...
No. It's stick. Like, you know, on the street.
Uh-huh.
What do you call it, that one? Tall, we call it a tall, but, you know. And all kinds of things. One thing I remember very well for me is we would go to the shoemaker, ask him for a piece of leather. Then my father would make a hole in it and put a string. And we have a lot of rain in Holland and then we would... step on it, and then it was very hard to pull it off again, you know.
Oh.
Things like that, and then hide and seek and whatever, you know, always outdoors.
Yeah.
You know.
Yes. Were there some wild places, some woods or shoreline where you could go and be in nature? Because it's a pretty big city.
Yeah, no. We had big parks, but, you know, but of course we all had bicycles, and so the North Sea was never too far away, you know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah.
What people here don't understand is that even if it was raining, we went on a bicycle to the beach. Because if you wait in Holland, you can be waiting forever, you know, so.
Yes. And Holland,
so we enjoyed it.
I think that's a really good point, because Holland is known for its fabulous public transportation.
They still have that.
And so your freedom to get around usually comes by bike, right?
Oh, yes, absolutely, yeah.
There was
yeah.
a wonderful National Geographic spread about the bike passageways in Holland that go up over the roadways.
Yes.
These big, beautiful roundabouts for bikes.
Yes.
Lovely. So when you were a boy growing up in Holland, what did you think you might want to grow up and become? Did you have career aspirations?
I have no idea. No. I had no idea, you know. My father painted, and so that's eventually why I ended up in that world. But... ambitions, I can't say. Well, I wanted to be on the stage, but then, you know, you had places where you could go for information. So my father took me there, and they were not encouraging. They said, it's very hard to make a living in there, blah, blah, blah. So according to my father, that fell by the wayside. So when you speak of that, no, I remember that was one of my ambitions to become an actor.
You explored being an actor and decided against it.
It never happened.
When Hitler's army invaded the Netherlands during World War II, you were 17 years old and spent the hunger winter encamped in Germany before liberation and reunification with your family in 1945. I wondered if you can tell us a little bit about that time and what it was like when you were rounded up and sent to Germany.
Well, first of all, of course, we were, you know, when the Germans attacked us, we had an airport in Rotterdam, and in the middle of the night, we heard all that sound, and we were not prepared for that at all. And so we all got out of bed, we stood on the balcony, and we saw all these things coming out of the sky. We had never seen parachutes, and there were all these soldiers. So I lived on the southern part of the river, and we were occupied in one morning, you know. And then The Germans couldn't cross the river, so that's why they bombed the city, you know what I mean? And that was a severe, severe bombing, you know. So, and I remember that well, because you saw everything burned, and so you fly, papers flying through the sky. It was unbelievable, you know.
Surreal.
And then, yeah. And then, of course, then we capitulated after that bombardment, and the whole country capitulated. And, well, then the horrible year started, of course, you know, with curfew hours and less food and, you know, and all kinds of dangers, you know what I mean? Yeah, yeah.
So many.
Yeah. And so, and then in 1944, they called it the Razzia of Rotterdam. And every young man between the age of 18 and 40 had to get out in the street, and there were the German soldiers were on each corner with machine guns, and if they found you still in the house, they shot your whole family. Besides, we were hiding somebody, so, you know, I had to go out, and then we were all transported to Germany, and that was a horrible, horrible ride, you know what I mean, in a freight car, no bathrooms, no food, nothing for 3 days. And then we were put in a camp, and but it was still so unorganized that two other fellows and I, we just walked out after a few days. We decided to go walk back to the border of Holland. And, of course, that in itself was difficult because we had no money, no coupons for stuff, you know. It was horrendous. And people that were helpful, they still wondered. They said, how come you're still on the road? Because there were young Germans up to the age of 14 were militarized. The rest were all forced labor. But anyhow, to make a long story short, we got close to the border, but then we were arrested, you know. And from then on, I was in the prison camp, you know. First in the prison and then transported from there.
In the prison camp, was that forced labor as well?
Yes, yeah, yeah, yeah. One bowl of soup a day and, you know.
Right, so it was different than Auschwitz.
Oh, definitely,
but
definitely.
Maybe
I would never compare my misery to that.
No,
you
no.
Know what I mean?
So it was probably a little more like when the Japanese Americans were rounded up and put in an encampment. Have you learned about that before?
Oh, sure.
Here during World
yeah.
War II? And
yeah.
Was it more like that where you were encamped and
No, it was much
cared
worse,
for?
You know. No, much worse.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, yeah. Your hair was shaven off so that you could never escape again. You know what I mean? Because then, that was not the style then.
Gave ball, you so. Away. Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, no. And it was hard work and hardly any food. And some died from hunger. You know what I mean? And, like, but in, of course, in Holland, in 1944 to 1945, was the hunger winter. Tens of thousands of people died from hunger.
Starved out.
You know, yeah, yeah. So
that was an intense time.
Yeah.
I know the Jewish population was devastated from 154,000 people to 14,000 people between 1944 and 1947.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So when you returned to Rotterdam in 1945, what was that like for you? The city had been bombed out. Many people were missing. There must have been...
Oh, yeah. I lost a lot of Jewish friends and everything, but... But at least you were home again, you know what I mean? And my brother-in-law also made it back home, you know? So at least in that sense, we were reunited. Some of my members of the family, not direct family, but cousins, they died over there, you know? But in my own family, we were reunited, you know what I mean?
So probably a crazy mix of joy and grief.
Right, right, yeah.
And relief.
Yeah, yeah. And I always remember my mother said, "My God, what are we going to do with you?" Because I was covered with lice, you know. Because that was never taken care of course, when you were in those camps. You
no,
know what I mean?
Of course. How uncomfortable, too.
Ugh, horrendous, yeah.
It must have been cold. I can't imagine there was enough blankets and clothing to go around.
I wonder now, you know, like there was never a change of clothes. And never a shower or anything. I can't remember how we made it through that, but we did. You know what I mean?
You did.
Somehow. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
So you came back to Rotterdam, and then how did you find your way to art school after things began to open back up throughout Holland? And
well, you know, it was sometimes in... I would say the beginning of 1944, when it was closed already. I was already studying art, but, you know, many things came to a complete standstill. And but then, you know, after a short while, after I was back, it reopened, so I went back to study art. You know what I mean?
And did you have a particular kind of art you studied? Were you doing classical art or commercial art?
Well... I sometimes say, how come it was so classical? Because Picasso was already around, Matisse was already around, you know. There was very modern art, but not for us, you know. Very academic.
Uh-huh. I sometimes think education's like that. We study things that happened a long time ago, but not more recently.
Yes, yes, yes. But I enjoyed the education, you know, and everything, so it's like... And I think I told you then, of course, when I came to America after a while, I had not intended to do commercial art. But then to make a living, there was a direction I went into, you know. I was very unhappy about it at first. And then I said, well, I could be waiting on tables in restaurants, like a lot of our people that want to act or paint or something, right?
Sure. So... You were in Holland in art school, and then next thing you knew, you were a commercial artist in the United States. Can you help listeners understand the transition there? How did you get to the United States?
Well, I met my first wife, my late first wife, in art school. But she was born in America, so they went back to America in 1947. They were stuck in Holland during the war, too. And so then I applied for the green card and took 2 years, and then that's how come I came in 1949.
Great.
You know. Yes.
You are listening to WMPG, Southern Maine Community Radio, broadcasting from USM. I'm Kate Manahan, and this is New Mainers Speak. If you're just joining us, welcome. My guest today is Wim Schemmer, originally from the Netherlands, arrived in the United States in 1949. He lived in Texas and New York City and eventually made his way to Steep Falls, Maine, his home where he paints and lives with his wife, Olga, for 50 years.
Yes, yeah. Right, yeah.
So what was life like for a Dutch immigrant in 1949 post-war America? What were your
impressions? Well, it was very different for me, you know. First of all, it was in Kansas City, and I found it very difficult to adjust to do many things, you know. For instance, when someone says to you, you have to realize here in America, by the time you're 30, I was 26 at the time, and you don't own your own house and your own car, you're considered a failure. Well, that stunned me, you know. Or someone said to you, oh, you mean you lived in Europe during the war? That must have been terrible. Yes, it was. Well, it was terrible here too, because I always smoked Lucky Strike, and then I had to smoke whatever.
All things relative, I suppose.
Yes, right, indeed. And then I also, what bothered me was, in a way, they were like in isolation. They didn't care about what was on in the rest of the world, you know. And, for instance, after 2 years when we decided to move to New York, this was remarks I would get. You mean you go to New York, you don't mind being pushed around by those Jews? Well, that horrified me, those remarks, you know.
Sure. Very ignorant.
Yeah. So, but that was my... Then,
that was your introduction.
And for instance, things that also came totally as new to me is... you would use the bus and so forth, you know, and if a black person sat next to a white person, this was in Kansas City at that time, not anymore, of course, but at that time in 1949, the white person would immediately get up and move to another seat. That was all not...
That didn't make sense to a Dutchman.
No, not after what I had seen of tragedies, you know, with the war.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
Against Jews and gypsies and what have you. You know what I mean? Yeah.
So you thought maybe New York City would be a better fit for you.
Oh, the minute I hit New York, I felt at home.
Yes, much easier. Much easier for a non-driver.
Hmm?
For a non-driver, too.
Yeah. Oh, ideal.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But
transportation.
So I would love it if you could tell us about your commercial art career. Was it hard working in New York City as an immigrant? Did anybody even recognize you as an immigrant?
No, not as an immigrant, because there's so many immigrants there, you know. So they only looked at your work, and you either made it or you didn't make it. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And so my late wife, she did greeting cards for Hallmark. That's why we lived in Kansas City. And then when we moved to New York, she got a job at Norcross, which was a big greeting card company. And then she lost her job, so she quickly taught me who to do greeting cards. And we both started to freelance. And then one of the companies that she freelanced for, they offered her a job. But she didn't want it. She said, but, you know, try my husband. So I showed my samples, and then they hired me.
Was that Potpourri?
And I did that. No, that was... I forget the name. Dola.
Dola.
So I actually did that till I moved to Maine, you know. And then in Maine, I began to freelance. And that all worked out very, very well, you know.
What made you want to move to Maine?
Well, I had a very good friend in New York. Every Saturday we went to the art galleries, you know, and things like that. And he died of cancer. And he had a wonderful collection of art, and he asked me to take care of that. He said, because my family in Sea Falls, they wouldn't know what to do with it, you know. So I did that. I went to the auction houses and everything. And then he had moved. He was never married. He moved back to Sea Falls because he got so ill, and his family wanted him back. So I would talk to him over the phone and with the family, but I'd never been to Maine. And then he died, and the family asked me to come to the funeral. So I came to the funeral, and in the meantime, he still had his apartment in Manhattan, you know, with a great collection of books and all this stuff. So the family asked me again to take care of that. So in return, they asked my family to come and visit Steve Falls. Well, we loved it, you know, swimming in the Resaco River and all that stuff. And then the following year, they invited us again. And then Evelyn had inherited her father's house, and she was going to sell it. And I won't go in detail, but in the end, we bought the house.
Oh, you bought your friend's house.
We bought the friend's house. And then, of course, I realized in a hurry we had to rent it out. We were not ready to come, you know, because two of my older sons from my late first wife, they were in the best public high schools in New York. And so I wanted them to finish that and wait till they were in college.
That
so that's
been a
what
little
we
shocking.
Did. Yeah. And then we moved here, you know. And I have to admit, it took me over a year to get used to it. But believe it or not, the thing that saved me was the public radio station. Then I fell in touch with the world again.
Yay for radio.
Yeah. And I could do my work that way. And so, you know, it all worked out well.
Yeah, so you've been producing work for 70 years. And what do you do with all that original art? How do you catalog it and keep it?
Well, first of all, I have a little gallery in Sea Falls. And some of the commercial work has been selling quite well, you know, to my surprise. You know, Christmas stuff and everything.
Sure.
Yeah, so...
So you're selling some off?
Yeah, I have, a number of them at Gallery 302 in Bridgeton, where I once exhibited my own work, and so forth. So, you know, just...
Do you have special ones that you've framed and kept forever? Do you give them as gifts? I mean, that's a lot of work, I imagine, you've produced over time.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe I told you that... About 5 years ago, 5 or 6 years ago, I think I told you, nowadays, for the past 20, 30 years, they have to return your work. You only sell them the right to reproduce it.
So the artist keeps
before
the
that
original.
You sold it outright, but no longer.
Oh,
you know,
so
they have to return it. So you end up with all this work. So I said to Olga, you know, maybe I should mat some and frame some and see. As if I sent out a vibe, 2 days later, Gallery 302 called me and said, we'd like to ask you a favor. Would you display your Christmas commercials in our gallery? I said, sure. So I sold 8 that winter.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
So that's gallery302.com. You can... find your way out there,
yes,
too.
Yeah,
the
yeah.
Beautiful hinterlands.
Yeah.
So tell us about where people might be able to see your work. Can they see it online? Or is it at the gallery now?
There may be some online. I don't know what Olga did. I know nothing about computers, I have to admit, you know. But for one thing, I belong to the Saco River artist group, and we have at least 2 exhibitions here, one at the Merritt House in Standish and one at the Old White Church in begins with the B.
Buxton,
right, yes, yeah. So that's one way of, you know, and then, you know, you sell things there, you know. So.
When I Googled to see if I could find some of your art, there are a few things that are for sale that you had mentioned, you know, you were in commercial art, and that meant you would make the art and they would put it on serving trays and napkins and...
Absolutely, yeah. There's mugs and what have you,
yeah.
Know what I mean?
Yeah, and so there are a few things, like on eBay, where you can buy a Wim Shemmer picture of... little dogs tucked in stockings for Christmas, or a kitten looking over its shoulder.
Olga has noticed that some of my stuff people try to sell.
Yeah.
You know, we still have some at home because at one point Olga opened, even though she was teaching, you know, high school, she opened a little gift shop where my little gallery is now.
Oh, you know what I mean? So you've been selling your work for a while.
So there is still some of that stuff, you know what I mean? Yeah, yeah.
Are some people sometimes surprised by the fact that you're still creating art as you approach your 93rd birthday?
Yeah, this month.
Yeah. Are they surprised that you're still practicing?
Yeah, I don't know why. You know, it's as if you're incapable of doing anything.
I think 93 can look really different on different people.
I
you make
so.
93 look really good.
Thank you.
Lim, you are a delightful person. I was struck right from the start by your ease of laughter and your openness, and your art seems to hold those same wonderful, warm qualities. I want to thank you so much for coming on the show today and sharing your unique immigration story.
Well, I enjoyed it, and, you know,
maybe
I really did.
Great.
Thank
maybe you'll
you.
Come back sometime.
Yeah.
I'm Kate Manahan in the studio with my guest, Wim Shemmer. We will close today's program with a song he's chosen for us. I wonder if you could tell listeners about why you picked this song to share today, Wim.
Oh, from the opera?
Yes.
Well, it's one of my favorite operas.
Which
and
opera
I love Maria Callas.
It's Madame Butterfly.
Yeah.